Ash Marines.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. You two, they're actually from Ireland. They have nothing to do with Boston. B.B. King, he's not from Boston either. Yeah, don't even get my Boston hate going. That's a great song. Joining me, Daryl Hill, former captain.
What's going on?
Nothing, Captain, United States Marine Corps.
Major,
trust me, you don't want the tag Major. Captain's such a cooler rank.
It is a cooler rank.
It is.
I always wanted to be a sergeant personally, but they wouldn't demote me.
You know,
either way you look at it.
What I don't like, the other thing I don't like about Major is, why do second lieutenants and Majors have to wear gold rank insignia if Brigadier Generals don't? Don't you think Brigadier Generals ought to have to wear a gold star?
Dude, I don't know. That's way above my pay grade to figure that stuff out.
No, it's just a color question. It's a question of consistency and color. So I'm thinking, anyway, why do the second lieutenants and the majors have to be the jackasses if the brigadier generals don't? Yeah,
I don't know. You could just promote me to colonel then.
Exactly. Why do we have to play this game? The Darryl, we need to learn about you. First of all, born and raised where?
I was actually born in Delaware, Wilmington, Delaware. I lived there until my parents got divorced, roughly, and then moved down to Jupiter, Florida. Went to junior high and high school down there.
All right. So you're in Jupiter, Florida. How does the Marine Corps get on your horizon as a kid or as a young person?
You know, ever since I was growing up, my buddy Steve Berlin across the street had a big influence in his dad, actually. Without realizing it, you know, we grew up and we'd always go to the Army surplus stores and we would buy the old Vietnam era, like equipment. And
right.
We even had the face paint that you had to really like melt to get on your face. I mean,
love that stuff.
And we would run around in the woods and we'd spray paint the weapons that you'd buy then at that point, were the old, like hot pink ones and right. We'd spray paint them black and then we'd run around the woods chasing people. So that's kind of, how it started out for me. And I was always really good at like hiding, you know, and I would always be the guy that could hide out there and nobody would find me. And I would sneak up on the people and then shoot them. So we just used to play, like, we called it playing army in the woods. And we would go to like the national parks, or we would go to, like the state park, and like we would hide and jump out and terrorize people at a young age. That was just me growing up. I already know how to read like a compass and stuff. I mean, that was kind of a deal.
So that was you just playing as a kid.
Yeah. That was me playing as a kid. I didn't know I was going to grow up and do it for real.
But no, I mean, cause a lot of us do that, you know, influenced by, by whether it's things we saw on TV, pictures we saw up in homes, you know, all those things influenced. And then, but you know, I will tell you, one of the cool things though, if you grew up like that, is going to a surplus store for the first time.
Oh, that was so cool!
All that stuff.
We went to the Aberdeen Proving Ground. They have a tank show there. I guess I don't know if they still do it. I think it was like once a year. But so Steve and his dad took me with him and his brother Stan, and we went down there. And Steve wanted to go to the Naval Academy, and I remember even back then as a kid, and he would talk about it. I had no idea even what it was. And you know, I remember going to the tank show, and these huge like tanks were rolling through, and they had, I'm pretty sure they had the Abrams then, but they had a bunch of other tanks that were there too. And it was just cool. I was like, wow, this is like cool stuff. And we got a chance to take pictures, being up on the tank, like afterwards and stuff. And, it was like super cool. And and if you've ever been to Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Maryland, and they have this, area where you can go and you can see like all these like old tanks, and you can see, enemy tanks, and, they have them all on display and stuff like that. I didn't know I was going to go back there about, I don't know, 10, 15 years later and get a chance to actually see behind the scenes and what they have in the secret areas, which was actually really cool.
Pretty cool stuff. So
we got a chance. Yeah.
What year did you go through there?
I was probably like 8, 9 years old at the time.
How old were you? What year did you go through and see the secret part of it?
Oh, that was after I actually graduated from TBS and got accepted to be an infantry officer in the Marine Corps. And
what year?
Going up there. That was back in 2002.
Yeah, we started doing that. General Allen was there as a group chief when I was teaching there. When I was teaching there, and we got them to. Allow us to, you know, to give tours of, you know, that kind of the newest and most updated version of Soviet weapons, the weapons that you know, our lieutenants would see, and took the lieutenants up there. It was really a cool, enjoyable, trip and certainly an eye opener. You have to be a dwarf to get into a Russian tank. Yeah, I mean, they're not big. You can't be a big guy and be in that. I mean, they have height requirements, you know. When they jump off their tanks, they're all yelling, "Zipplane, zipplane, zipplane." You know, they're like little, they gotta be little people to do that. It's honestly incredible. So, anyway, I'm joking about that. They don't yell "Zipplane" because they don't speak they don't speak English. Talk to us about where you go to college.
So basically, growing up as a kid, you know, I was down in Florida at that and I took the ASVAB because I wanted to get out of class.
Sure.
I was like, oh, well, I don't take a class this afternoon. They have this test. And I was like, oh, I don't feel like going to class. So I'll go take this test. And I took the ASVAB test, and I had the Navy recruiter calling me, the Marine recruiter, all the recruiters are calling me at that point. I guess I scored pretty high, according to them, but you never know.
Right.
So I go and, my mom took me down to an air show. It was down in Fort Lauderdale, and they had like a pull-up bar there. And I was wrestling in high school and stuff like that, and I just hopped up on the pull-up bar and whipped out 20 pull-ups like it was no big deal. And, of course, it was the Marine pull-up bar. You know, nobody else had pull-up bars like that at the shows because, you know, the Marines do it the best, right?
Right.
So I did that. And I didn't honestly understand the difference between the Marine Corps and the Army at the time. You know, I just didn't know, honestly. So, you know, that's why, growing up and stuff like that, it was always like, we were just called a plain army in the woods,
right.
You know, So at a point in time, I always loved football. That was always a big passion of mine. I used to get, my mom used to take me down. We used to go to the Miami Hurricane games growing up. My father is a big influence on me because he had played football in college, mm-hmm. in Georgia. And, I grew up playing football ever since I was probably 8, 9 years old when I first started playing first, second grade, like organized football, Pop Warner. I played it my whole life. There was only 1 year I didn't play it, all the way up until I think I was like 23. I think I was 24 when I finally stopped playing. So for me, like, football was huge. I always wanted to play college football. And I had these schools looking at me, from high school, when I was getting ready to graduate, my senior year, and I was getting a lot of letters in the mail, you know, as kids, you know, you get a lot of letters. But the schools that were pursuing me the most was Air Force, Army, and, Navy. So, and I didn't know anything about the service academies for the most part. I visited there once, I remember as a child, because my mom and dad took my brothers to go see the schools. And I remember kind of being there, but I didn't really remember much. So what ended up happening was, some of these other schools, like I was Northwestern, I was talking to a little bit, and Duke, and like a lot of Ivy League schools,
right.
Like Brown and the Harvard, and a lot of these like smarter ended schools. And they don't give like the same kind of scholarships that you get from going to a service academy as well. And I was looking at, the opportunity side of it. And then I went and asked, you know, my mom, she was really big on going to like the Naval Academy. I had no idea why, but you know, as young kids, we're never listening to our parents. You know, and I went and I asked my teachers and I said, hey, you know, this is some of the schools I'm looking to go to. And they're all telling me, well, you should go to the Naval Academy. And you know, at the time I had one of my good friends from high school, you know, Kevin Campbell, he was actually getting accepted to go to the Naval Academy. So I went and asked him, like, hey, Kevin, I was like, and Kevin's like super smart. I mean, like, this guy is amazing. He was salutatorian as a high school. He barely got beat out for being the number one person in our high school, right. Like a 4.5 plus GPA. You know, I mean, the guy is, he's amazing, amazing dude. And, he had gotten accepted to go play soccer there. And I was like, hey, what is your take on it? Because, you know, you're at that age in life, you're looking at a 5-year commitment, at this point going to school somewhere. And then on top of that, there's going to be another 5-year commitment in the military. So
right.
As an 17-year-old kid at the time, you're looking at like a 10-year track you're about to run on.
Yeah.
And I'm not one of those people that ever quits anything. So I know like, hey, once I say I'm going to do it, I'm like, all right, it's on, you know, let's go, let's do this. You know, so I'm very conscious of my words. And if I say I'm going to do something, then I go out and do it.
But even for that kid, 10 years, that's forever. You've only been alive 17.
Yeah.
And that's a huge commitment. And, you know, I think it's really, that's an interesting choice because, if you don't have somebody in your family that's gone and you're deciding that for the first time, there's a lot of off ramps that you can easily take not to go do that the first time. You don't have anybody that blazed the trail for you. So I think that's a really interesting decision because it's a huge decision for a young person, especially one that has no family affiliation with it so that they've kind of grown up with it. They know there's a comfort level with it. You'll be okay. It's not that long. Everybody's got to go to college. All the things kids grow up with that kind of brings that 10 number down to like 5, you know, and then you got to go through training. Well, that takes a year. So really you owe them 4 years. That's what it's about. Oh, really? Mm-hmm. That's it, Dad? Yeah, that's it. Don't worry about it. You know, and we'll cross that bridge when it comes to it, but just don't worry about it because it's not as big as it sounds. You don't have that in you. You don't have that guy at home telling you that as you look at that commitment.
No.
So it's interesting.
Yeah, so I sat down and I looked at that. At the same time, I looked at the opportunity to play, you know, Division I football. That was a huge thing for me. And I was at the time about 180 pounds, 6 foot, and I was playing defensive line. And I was playing the defensive end. And the thing about it is I'm going against kids in high school. On average, the kids I went up against were 6'4", about 275 pounds.
Right.
You know, and here I am, a 180, weighing 6 feet tall. And my, like, I remember this one guy, he was 6'8", like 300 some pounds. And he was a behemoth. I mean, he went on to go play at, I think Central Florida, you know, got a full scholarship to go there. And the county I was in, that area, we had like, I don't know, like 42 Division I scholarships.
Wow.
I mean, we could have fielded our own team with the amount of kids that we had to go to Division I. And we're talking about guys that are going to Florida State, going to Miami, going to Nebraska, you know, all over the country. West Virginia, I had several buddies go to West Virginia. You know, a couple of my teammates went off to play college ball as well. And then that same year in the state of Delaware, they had two kids, you know, they got signed and picked up by Division I schools or something like that. And somehow I ended up in that mix. So really it's just one. And my other buddy, Buck, who actually went to the Naval Academy with me. So, you know, for me, it was one of those things where I wanted to play football in college. I always had like an affinity for the military. But honestly, it was my mom was the biggest influence on me with that. We came home from the weekend, and I had gotten this letter in the mail about coming to a football game up at the Naval Academy, and I kind of like dismissed it. I just, you know, I'm coming home from practice. I go all out on practice, and I go all out on my books. And, you know, my mom's working 3-4 nights a week as a nurse, 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., so I'm barely seeing her. And I'm coming home. I'm studying on my own. I'm doing everything on my own. I'm also working as well, you know, to, you know, make extra money and stuff like that to pay for things. And I was always doing that as a kid, just kind of transferred over to high school as well. So I went to a point where, my mom saw this letter and I came home, I think it was like Friday afternoon or something like that. And she's like, pack your bag, you know, and I'm like, where are we going? She's like, we're going to Annapolis. I'm like, where's that? And, she's like, we're going to go see a football game up in Annapolis at the Naval Academy. And I was like, oh, Mom, I was like, I really don't feel like going this weekend. I was like, this is our only bye weekend this season. You know, I'm not going to get an opportunity to go to the beach and hang out with my friends. And that's what I'm thinking as, you know, 18-year-old kid, right?
Right. And she's thinking, I got to set the hook.
Yeah.
I got to set the hook for this fish. So we're going.
So that's what we did. So we get on a plane. We go to Annapolis. Got a chance to go into, because I was thinking, you know, I was thinking, hey, these guys are probably a bunch of dorks. You know, they're all these, like, you know, really smart kids and not probably kids I'm going to associate with or like and stuff like that. I was kind of thinking that because the kids are super smart, but they are
dorks. Come on, tell the truth. They are dorks. Yeah. There's a lot of dorks there. We tend not to get the dorks in the Marine Corps because they know that they don't want to hang out with the rest of us schmoes. But there's a lot of dorks there. Don't sell that on All Marine Radio. Do not do that.
I can't deny that.
Thank you.
But the thing about it was, is like, so I went there, and I remember going in the locker room in the morning, and I saw these guys working out, and I talked to some of the guys who were working out in there, and they were coaching as well and helping out. And I remember meeting them, and I was like, wow, these are actually dudes I can hang out with. That was the biggest thing that came to mind. I was like, all right, these are really solid dudes, you know. And, you know, as I sat and walked around in this weight room, and I could just kind of feel like they're traditional a little bit, and I could see, like, hey, this is what it's going to be like. You know, I was like, all right, I can handle this. If I can, as long as I got good dudes around me, I'm okay.
Right.
You know, and that was always kind of my thing. So, I ended up getting offered a scholarship to go there and go to the prep school.
Right.
So I went to the prep school up in Rhode Island. Now remember, I'm down in Florida.
Right.
In the wintertime, it's 80 degrees.
Right.
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 I mean, I'm not used to this acclimate of like walking into Rhode Island. So I walk into Rhode Island and we're not. Rhode Island is an island. That's why it's called Rhode Island. But at the same time, there's a little island that we actually are on going to the prep school where literally you're surrounded on all three sides by water. And there's like this one little sliver that leads you over to like the mainland area. So it's like 30 degrees there and it's below freezing at times and 30 mile an hour winds. And I remember just freezing my butt off. You know, and just being there, I'm like, oh, man, this sucks. I remember, like, you know, it's 5 o'clock walking to the weight room after a grueling day of academics all day and then walking over to the weight room and, like, literally sleet is hitting me in the face and I've got, like, two jackets on.
Okay, stop. I lived in North Dakota. It's not that cold in Rhode Island, okay? I know that. Now, it's a big transition from – so stop it. I mean, it's a big transition from Florida. I got it. But you're there. And so let me ask, so you go to the prep school and then you get accepted to the Naval Academy, right? At what point does the Marine Corps get on your horizon? Because you say you don't know the difference. Or is it the fact that the Marine Corps is the Army for the Navy?
Well, the first Marine I remember meeting was the one named Gunny Flynn. And Gunny Flynn was, he was awesome. He just squared away, Gunny. And he was our, he was right down the hallway from my platoon. Because at the prep school we're at, it's a military prep school. So right. We're wearing military uniforms. We've got officers that are there. Captain, it was Lieutenant Fallon, then Captain Fallon, and now I've seen him out in the fleet as Lieutenant Colonel Fallon. I don't know.
Hold on.
Colonel ever, but
it's Colonel yeah. Fallon now, and get that Colonel right Fallon. Because he's an angry human being.
He's angry. Yeah,
he's an angry man. We served in Afghanistan together. He ran, for the first Marine, for Regimental Combat Team 1. He was the OPSO, and, I worked in current
yep.
ops. And, James Fallon, angry human. Okay. Just so everybody knows. Okay. Continue.
Yeah.
So he's at the prep school?
He's at the prep school.
Wow.
Yeah. So I met him and I met, Gunny Flynn, and it was just like something about them just being them. You know, and like the personality and stuff like that, I kind of gravitated towards that kind of alpha male kind of
right.
individual, always wanting to challenge, not taking shit from anybody, was not afraid to speak their mind, you know, was going to put you in your place, you know, and you were going to like it.
Yikes.
It was that kind of personality. I
right.
was like, man, I can relate. I can handle that. You know, what I couldn't handle is the Navy side of things, is just the wishy-washy, and just the way that, I'm not saying it's like this in all places and stuff, but when I went down to Annapolis, it was always the Marines that were looking out for me in the sense, like if I got in trouble or something that happened to me, it was always the Marines that were standing up for me. And it was always the Navy guys that were just throwing me down the river. Like I remember.
These bastards. They do that, man. What's up with that?
I'll never forget. It was this one chief. So I'm going to drop a manhole cover right here. That was, I'm not going to say his name, but I was getting ready to see the admiral because I had gotten in trouble, rightfully so. I had done something I shouldn't have done. I don't even remember which time it was, but I was getting ready to walk into the room and the chief looks at me and says, oh, you'll be fine. You're doing good. And you know, yada, yada. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, and then we get in there. And I'm standing tall in front of the admiral, and the chief comes in to speak on, unquote, my behalf, because he's in my chain of command, and he comes in and speaks, and he sells me down the river, like, oh, my God, I was like, that guy, I mean, I sound like a horrible human being, and I was like, I didn't even do what that guy said, you know, and I was like, where did that guy even come up? And like 5 minutes before that, he was telling me how I'm doing good and just patting me on the back,
right.
And I was like, wow, thanks for the knife, you can leave it on the table.
So that's how the culture of the Marine Corps, that's how the culture of the Marine Corps gets in front of you. So you go Marine option,
yeah.
And I would say becoming an infantryman for you is a no-brainer in the Marine Corps?
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. Yeah, because my biggest thing is I always, it's kind of funny. So I one of the things I wanted to do at the Naval Academy is I wanted to fly, right?
What?
And so, I know, it's kind of crazy.
It
right?
is crazy.
So I went in and I met some of the pilots. And I was like, you know what? I was like, I don't really relate to these guys. I was like, this is kind of not my style. And I got a chance to do, we do this thing at the Naval Academy where we do like approach a mid where you go down for like a month and you spend 2 weeks with an infantry unit and 2 weeks with an air wing unit. And I spent my first 2 weeks with the guys in LAR, Lieutenant Harlow. Remember, he was the officer I followed around. And, so it was with the guys down in Camp Lejeune. And I had an absolute blast. I was like, man, these are my people.
But
like,
you know what?
Like,
all the things that you were raised with, team sports, right? Your dad being a team guy, you know, it's the Marine Corps, right? You don't know it at the time, but being a pilot's different, right? You're a technician. You're not and I tell, you know, if you play team sports, and especially if you've been a captain or anything like that, the Marine Corps is no different than that. It's a, you know, a little bit different
yeah.
language, a little bit different uniform, a little, and a much different haircut. But It's the same exact culture that you had on whatever team you played on. And so you cracked the code on that.
Yeah, and our team, honestly, at the Naval Academy is really unique, you know, because you're taking guys from just all over the country, all different walks of life, and it's a bunch of tough guys. You know, the guys that play at the Naval Academy are tough guys, and that's what makes them a good team, along with the coaching staff that they have there, right? Especially the guys they have right now. Coach Niemad and the coaching staff are just phenomenal at what they do at producing the players that they do every year. And because they just instill they find guys with good work ethic, and they find guys that are willing to go that extra mile, basically, and they find the tough guys, and that's how they put it out on the field. You know, and it's interesting, fun fact is, the coach up there at the Patriots, I don't know if you guys know that gentleman is, but he actually was raised at the Naval Academy, and he was like ball boy for like Roger Staubach and ball boy for Joe Bellino, and he used to travel around with his dad at the age of 7 and spent like 10,000 some odd hours just recruiting and look at other players that are out there and scouting reports and all that kind of stuff. And there's a reason he has the ability to pick a Tom Brady out of like the 5th round. You know, it's because he's able to see the intangibles that people have, you know, out there in the marketplace. He's able to see that when he meets with people and he meets with the staff, and he has a certain respect with his players, you know, and it's because of those things he learned. His dad actually coached at the Naval Academy for 30 plus years.
Right.
And is buried there. So, I mean, that's.
Oh, really? I didn't know he was buried there.
Yeah, he was buried there. I went to his funeral.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking, we're going to get to talk transition here, and we're going to talk about facing your fears. And we're talking to Darrell Hill, former major United States Marine Corps, via the Naval Academy, infantry guy. We're talking about his career and how he got to doing what he does now, which is mentoring people and making them better. Talk to me about how many combat deployments do you have?
So, you know, that was the thing is with me is I only had the opportunity to go on one combat deployment, and I'll openly, you know, share what happened with me that caused really the survivor's guilt, believe it or not, I didn't even understand at the time. And got a chance. So my first, when I showed up my first unit, and I think we had, I remember going out to California. So we graduated from IOC, which is Infantry Officers Course, which is an amazing course down in Quantico.
Right.
After graduating from that, we were sent out to our unit. So when I got to my unit, I was like an extra lieutenant in the battalion, and I was with 1-1. And that's out in Camp Horno, out in California, in Camp Pendleton. And I was just happy to be there. You know, honestly, I'd do whatever I was like. It was important to the H&S Company Commander at the time, and they already had an XO. They didn't really need another fucking lieutenant. And I had heard through the grapevine that there was a lieutenant that had committed suicide over at 3-1, and there was obviously a platoon was open over there. And I remember showing up to, and I was always one to kind of speak my mind. As Captain Fallonwood, or now Colonel Fallon, I was always wanted to kind of speak online, and I showed up to duty that Friday, and the regimental colonel, the XO, he said to me, he's like, hey, you know, Lieutenant, how are you doing? How are things going? I'm like, hey, things are going great, sir. He's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm not really doing a whole lot, sir, right now, because I'm waiting for a platoon to open up, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen, you know, anytime soon. And he said, oh, okay. You know, and I said, I mentioned how I had heard there was an opportunity over at 3-1 that, you know, they had somebody commit suicide, and was there any opportunity to get me on the deployment that they're going to do, you know, to fill that spot? You know, I would be happy to help any way I can. And he said, Roger, Lieutenant, that sounds great. And I'm like, I just went about my business. And then I got a call about 2 hours later from my company commander, and he said, hey, pack your bags, you're going over to 3-1. And I was like, sweet. So literally 2 days later, I met my platoon on like Friday. Over the course of the weekend, I think Monday, we went over to again on the boat, the Bonhomme Richard out of San Diego, and we sailed across the pond over to Iraq. So I did the rocket deployment. I literally pretty much got to know my platoon on the boat. and got a chance to, you know, gel with the platoon a little bit. And then we got into theater and started doing our thing. And it was a great opportunity to go out and serve and, you know, being in situations and stuff like that.
Now, what year was that and where'd you go?
That was an initial invasion, where we, you know, we were staged in Iraq, in Kuwait, and then we, went through the line of departure over into Iraq and, you know, kind of went all the way up to Baghdad.
So you're part of 3-1 and your battalion commander is Lou Caprarotta?
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. I think he's general now. So.
Lieutenant general. He's a buddy of mine. You know, he's an IOC instructor. Lou, for those of you who don't know him, he doesn't really argue with you. He just tells you how you're wrong. Mac, I want you to listen to me. Good idea. Let me tell you how it really works. Exactly. Give me a lesson learned out of your experience, during the march up. One.
So,
I'm going to limit you to one. Yeah, how about that?
The biggest thing is, it's just a no-brainer, I think, is, you know, always take care of your Marines, you know, in the sense of, you know, there were times, like, I would pull duty myself, you know. I would do the same thing that they were doing, you know, whatever the situation was. But always, you know, realize I was, you know, new, for any new butter bar second lieutenants out there, just realize as well that you need to make sure you give your Marines the opportunity to lead too. And one of the things that I kind of did by default, we're so used to doing stuff at IOC where you do everything, that I found myself like doing like too much at times. And my staff sergeant said, is like, hey, sir, like pulled me aside. He's like, hey, if you're doing this stuff, the Marines aren't. And I was like, oh, I got it. So I need to take a step back. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, okay, got it, staff sergeant. You know, and so that was one of the things I definitely learned as a new second lieutenant, to make sure that it's like, just because you know how to do it doesn't mean you should be the one actually doing it. You know, so I think that was definitely a valuable lesson I learned. And, I made sure, like, going forward that I pushed down as far as I could to the younger Marines to learn everything, you know, in the extent of like, my guys knew a lot more than all the other guys because I forced them to learn it.
Okay.
You know, it's like, all right, well, what's going to happen if I'm not here, kind of thing. So always playing out that side of understanding how to use the radio, how to get on a call for fire, how to do. My Marines know how to call for fire, knew how to, you know, even at the junior level, to call them like a 9-line report or whatever it was. So constantly just pushing the envelope with those guys and teaching them really a lot of the stuff that I learned in IOC on helping them expand. You know, because I didn't know, I was put into a weapons platoon. In a weapons company. So as a second lieutenant, you know, I was off by myself, you know, alone, you know, and normally that's typically a lieutenant who's already been on a deployment or something like that. It has that responsibility. But here it was, I was put into a really a bigger responsibility that a normal second lieutenant is put right into just like an infantry company. And you've got, you know, four other lieutenants in the company along with you. You've got an XO that's gone on deployment, a weapons platoon commander usually been on deployment, and you're able to ask them questions about what we should be doing. They already have a training plan, like, in place, and you're just kind of following along. So with me, you know, we created our own training plan. You know, I was the one that created it. I was the one briefing, Major Van Riper, which you probably know him too. so he was my first company commander.
Wow.
And I was briefing them on, like, what we're going to be doing. So when I got taken from that environment and I got put into a new environment of, hey, now you're going to be in a traditional rifle company. And I was like, oh, okay, sure, right? And then Lieutenant Jones, which I don't know, you probably know Greg Jones as well. He's Commandant's son. He's a great officer.
I don't know him.
So, yeah, he's a great officer. And so I was like arguing with Greg. I'm like, hey, this is what I'm doing. And I'm like, leave me alone kind of thing. And I didn't understand that, like, I'm like, why is he telling me what to do? I was like, because we have a company plan, you know, and the difference between a weapons platoon when you're off by yourself, as a weapons company is like, I'm briefing the company commander what we're doing, not the other way around most of the time.
Right.
You know, I'm like informing him what's going on versus like, now I'm being told what to do.
Right.
So it's just like, it was almost like going from an entrepreneur mindset over to like, now I'm going to work as an employee mindset a little bit.
Right.
So
no.
I was like,
actually, both of them, right, at the same time, and you got to be able to do that.
Yeah.
All right, we've got to take a quick break, Daryl. And when we come back, I want to talk about your transition into your business, and then talking about you and I meet because of a mutual friend, retired Marine Brigadier General Ron Baskowski. Introduces us, and I want to talk about facing your fears and breaking through your bullshit. So my guest, former Marine Major Daryl Hill, and we're going to take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
On a Thursday, we talk transitioning. And joining us is Daryl Hill. You can find him at Daryl Hill, D-A-R-Y-L, only one L, Hill, H-I-L-L.com. Daryl, talk about your decision to leave the Marine Corps, and then the business that you gravitated to.
Yeah, that was honestly one of the hardest decisions of my life, is like deciding that I was like going to leave the Marine Corps, like on active duty side of things. It was hard, you know. It was like leaving a family behind. You know, I definitely felt the kinships. And remember, it was Major Davis, who's one of my mentors, you know, said to me, he's like, you know, it's like, you're not going to miss the Marine Corps, you're going to miss the Marines, you know. And I was like, yeah, I was like, I get it, you know. And that was definitely the hardest thing, because you're, you know, being a team sport guy growing up, like you said, ever since I was a kid, playing a team, you know, it gives you a certain, like, identity, you know, especially, you know, for me, it was like, I became, like, I was like the man when I came out there on defense, when I came to football as an inside linebacker, and just being in charge constantly, being out there calling the shots, making the plays. Same thing as a lieutenant, you're out there, you know, calling the shots, making the plays with your guys. And being in that environment was something that was like, wow, walking away from that was like a big deal. But the reason I walked away from honestly was because I had been at a, you know, at a young age like that, I was put in situations where, you know, it's a life or death deal. And I had, unfortunately, I ended up leaving the unit I was with because I had a misunderstanding, misagreement, with the company, you know, commander at the time. And I ended up getting picked up by, General Mattis's team to go work on the staff at the Division Schools. They needed somebody, an officer down there to help run the school that was there, because the one guy was leaving to take over command. So they brought me down there, and I didn't get a chance to go on another deployment after that. And it was one of those things where I was not happy about it. I really was brokenhearted. Literally, I remember going home just bawling my eyes out, because of what happened. And it was one of those deep cuts that definitely hurt me and definitely kind of scarred me in that way. And
right.
It was like I was being taken away from, like, these are my guys, it's like my family, and you get taken out of that environment like that. It was very traumatic for me. So, you know, I was at a point where the person who was in charge of me at the time, the company commander, I honestly didn't have respect for him. I had respect for the rank and the position, but I didn't have respect for him. And that gentleman was actually eventually relieved in combat, or just being like unfit or whatever it was, that had happened. And, you know, it was one of those things where we had such great staff NCOs and such great Marines and Lieutenant Jones at the time, and other great officers in the company. We really outshined what was going on. But when you get in a combat situation, everything gets magnified. And it was at a point where there were guys who were getting, they were getting shot at because, or bad things were happening because of, you know, the way he was running the company. And then the gentleman was eventually relieved. And, I remember hearing from, you know, other people that were on the staff, like afterwards, that should never happen, that I shouldn't have never left the company per se and stuff like that. So that, you know, made me feel a little bit better, but it never really resolved from, you know, the way I truly felt, which was, it was a horrible feeling, you know, to have that, you know, taken away. And during that deployment, they end up losing, five guys in my old platoon. You know, four of them were killed in Fallujah. Another one was killed by IED beforehand. And I remember going to the funerals, you know, that were there, went to and it was hard, you know, and it was like, I couldn't sleep at nighttime. I would get angry. I remember sitting there and the base paper would come out and I'd see my Marines on the front of it. They were killed. I remember just picking that thing up and just throwing it like across the street, like the big old metal things. I mean, I was angry. Definitely had a lot of anger. associated with that. And it was one of those things where I couldn't sleep. And, you know, I poured my heart and soul into, like, all right, what could I do though? Like, I then went and focused on the job I had at hand, which was, you know, making sure I prepared the guys the best I could do to go to combat and stuff. And, we had an amazing team at division schools at the time. And some of the guys I actually had served in at 3-1. And, you know, looking back on it, I really made a huge difference, and I was actually given an award for the difference I made there. And I went from being this, you know, young butter bar second lieutenant, now first lieutenant, so now briefing like colonels on like, hey, this is what we're doing, you know, talking to, you know, opsos and talking to exos from battalions and, you know, making sure that they had what it was and, really streamlined the process for going through and getting taught. I mean, we had 21 different classes running at a given time that you could die in any one of them based on the operations we were doing, right, with from grenades to, you know, AK-47 classes to night optics and machine gun classes to mount classes. I mean, you name it, we're doing all kinds of high speed stuff. And, you know, I had full, complete trust and confidence in the staff and COs we had and the sergeants that are running the courses. So it's definitely learning lesson, you know, running an operation of that size. We had over 30,000 submarines go through our programs, during that time. And it was, learned a lot. Learned a lot on a high level too. It was like,
right. Well, hold on. No, okay. You have a tendency to be long winded. Do you know that?
Yeah.
You're like screwing this whole interview up because we are not going to get to face your fears, break through your bullshit, okay? So let me crop you there, son, okay? So you decide, let me tell you, it's one of the facts of life in the Marine Corps. It's a caste system. If you butt heads and you're junior, you lose. And if there's nobody in the vicinity that is a grown-up that can grab somebody who would put a harpoon through your chest, then you get a harpoon through the chest. So you get out and you have survivor's guilt and you're at the same place that a lot of guys I spoke to, on this program. And it's not a good place. You're kind of faking it during the day. You got your demons that you deal with. How do you ultimately come up with this idea of mentoring? How many different career changes do you make before you get there?
God, that's a great question. It was a running joke almost with my friends, and they'd always be asking me like what I'm doing now.
Right.
And it was. I mean, I remember it even looked like the amount of business cards. I probably was in about six or eight different like careers at one point in a short amount of time. Before I found what I'm doing now. And
okay, so hold on. So let me ask you this. So you're going through this, and again, that's not uncommon for guys who are searching for something. First of all, we live purpose-driven lives. I've never read the book, by the way. We live purpose-driven lives. That's how we view the world, the prism that we view it through. That's what makes sense. That's what got you to where you went. So now you're going out, you're making money, you're in the private sector. Does it click in your head, I've got to do something that I love, that gets me close to the way I felt when I was a Marine, when I was serving? How did you get pointed in that direction? How did you get pointed in that direction of a more purpose-driven life?
So for me, I'd always been, somewhat like an entrepreneurial kind of spirit, based on, you know, growing up and the way I've kind of raised by my dad.
Right.
And, I went to work with him. We went to get into real estate. It was 2007 at the time. Market just completely collapsed. So the projects we were going to work on together dried up. And he came to me and said, hey, son, we got to figure out something for you to do because I can't keep doing this. And we just don't have the funds to, you know, continue to go down this road. And I said, all right. I had figured out a little bit about marketing when I was on active duty. I figured out how to create a website because I had actually created that at the schoolhouse for division schools.
Right.
And I took the knowledge that I had and I started applying it to businesses and helping them, which I enjoyed doing. I enjoyed just thoroughly, you know, helping people and serving them in that capacity. But over time, I got a little bit jaded because some of the people I was working with weren't, you know, the best, nicest people, you know, and they were – I was like, you know what, I'm kind of burnt out with this. I even got into doing mortgages too. I did mortgages for people, and I kind of eventually got jaded and burned out of that because the people were just shopping around for rates at that point, and it wasn't really about service at all. You know, I got into doing real estate. You know, I was doing real estate for a good amount of time there, and I was doing really well. I was in a short amount of time, I got a huge bunch of leads that came in the door. And then this gentleman called me up about, it was a friend of mine, I think Colonel Campbell, called me up, Derek Campbell, and he said, hey, I got my buddy over there. He's doing something with homeowners, and he's making money, something to do with insurance. And I was like, all right, well, if we get a chance to talk to homeowners, sounds like a good program. So I called him up. He came by the office, talked to me and the other realtor, and I said, hey, if there's, you know, this sounds too good to be true. It's kind of going to my mind. I was like, where's the real work? It's got to be real work. They're doing, he's like, yeah, these people send in applications because they want help with getting life insurance. And, you go out and talk to them. And I was like, all right, well, what do you talk about? I was like, talk about death and.
Okay. Now stay focused now. You're drifting on me. Come on. We got to get to how you started this business.
I am. I'm getting there really quick.
We're running out of time and nobody's going to find out how to fight through their bullshit, man. Come on.
So. I get into an insurance business. I end up doing that for 3 years. In the time period, I meet this gentleman named Troy, and I entered into at the time of doing this, I met this gentleman named Tom. Tom actually trained me how to deal with my own PTSD stuff that I was dealing with, and then he trained me and mentored me over the next, like, 3 years. He was a Marine. He got out as a staff sergeant.
Right.
And at that point in time, I was helping my guy. So I started helping my guys. I was in the reserve still at this point, and I was helping guys that were in my old unit. Guys would call me up.
And hold on, is Tom a VA guy? Is he just a guy that has experience and help?
Tom is just a guy that has experience in helping people because of what he's been trained to do.
Right.
So he was not associated with the military whatsoever. Tom was like 55 at the time when I remember meeting him.
Okay.
And he had learned these skills and. He is simply applying them, and he was doing these skills to help other people who are just, you know, everyday civilians overcome different fears that they had. And Tom then trained me for the next 3 years on how to do that. And he said, like, he's told me he's his best student ever. And I was going through it, but I never saw myself being the guy sitting down and helping, you know, your everyday civilian that's out there or business owners and entrepreneurs. So over the next 3 years, I basically helped a lot of different veterans, talk to them and help them overcome stuff. And guys would come up to me afterwards, like, hey, what did you do to so-and-so? They're like happy now. And I was like, oh, I just had a conversation with them. And, I would do this and I'd help these guys. And then I ended up helping this entrepreneur one day. And when I helped the entrepreneur, that was my friend Troy. And all this is public. You can go listen to the audios and videos. You've got a chance to meet Troy.
Right.
And I helped Troy overcome his issues with PTSD and dealing with, you know, money blocks that he had and dealing with, even being, molested as a child, and all the stuff that actually had come up inside of him that was just totally negative and helped him deal with that stuff and ultimately changed his life because of it. And once I did that, he said to me, he's like, you need to do this for a career. He's like, this is what your true passion, your true gift is. And at that point, I've been doing insurance for like 3 years, which is the longest stint with me doing anything in a row.
Okay, so you're doing insurance and you're just doing this out of the goodness of your heart on the side?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
So, and the thing is like I was literally in the insurance appointment. A lot of times I'm helping people like overcome stuff, just sitting down having conversations with them.
Right.
They don't even realize it. And I was helping them like heal their marriages, and heal their families, and heal stuff that they were dealing with. So I would run into a lot of people that, you know, had a lot of different fears. You know, I mean, everybody has this, people have fears all the time about all kinds of different stuff. So I could never like leave anybody like on the table per se. You know, I was always like, I would just help them anyway. They wouldn't even realize it just by having a conversation with people. I do it in public all the time. People don't realize it. And I'm just like, just kind of quiet about it.
Okay.
So Troy said to me, he's like, no, you need to do this for a living. So I said, really? And he said, yeah. So I went back at that point, and I was at a kind of disenchanted a little bit with the insurance thing. I realized that I had a higher calling. That week I was hired by two people, and two people has led over, those two people have now led to well over 100 at this point, helping people overcome all kind of crazy fears and stuff. And I don't know how many thousands of people have heard stories that I've told now at this point that I've helped them. So So that's where I get into what I do today.
All right. So talk to me about I meet you from General Baskowski, who was a first lieutenant in Beirut when the building fell. And I met him as he was one of my instructors at the basic school. He introduces me to Daryl. So, Daryl, talk to me about post-traumatic stress and facing your fears, because a lot of people live with them, you know, and you talked about yours. Talk to me about how do you do it? Do you have advice for people out there that are dealing with it? What do you do?
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing with me was I was, I didn't realize I had it. You know, I didn't realize like I had psoriasis. See, I had dealt with, I had over 25 of my, you know, friends, mentors, and Marines I served with die in a 2-year period. And for me, that really affected me, and I didn't really realize it. And it was one of those things where, I basically, really like bottled a lot of those emotions up and kind of buried them. And they would come out in different ways of like anger. So I would say like, if you're having these anger outbursts or you have, you know, I can't speak about the things I talk about with General, you know, Kowski, but I can say that before I worked with him, you know, he would travel to Arlington and a lot of times like he would, you know, in the sense of like, he would not be happy, you know, and he would realize at that point his elevation was changing and his state was changing in his mind to somewhat like the negative feeling. And then since then, ever since we did the work together, he has no problem going and experiencing Arlington and being in a good place, you know, where he doesn't have those same like negative thoughts anymore or the high energy, that stress that's around it that it once was. And that was, like you said, a person who went through Beirut, which is, you know, losing them. They lost a lot of guys there, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So the in the process itself, the biggest thing is first is just discovering, like, where that root cause comes from. You know, so if you had something that happened along the way and you had to identify whatever that first thing was in your life that caused that, it might not even been something from the Marine Corps. It might have been something that happened previous to the Marine Corps. Maybe you saw somebody killed as a kid. Maybe you had some kind of anger like I did as a child from having my family just ripped apart from divorce.
Right.
Where that first time is, and then look at how your mind thinks about that, and then go forward in the process and realize, like, now today, you know, the awareness side of it, I call it the DART process. The awareness side of it is, like, when do I do those things right now? Like, when are those triggers come up for me where all of a sudden I am getting angry or I'm getting upset? And then the next thing is the reprogramming side of things is like, all right, well, let's look at like why you're doing those things. You know, where do they come from? And now that you know like where they come from, like what are you really robbing yourself of? Because you're focused on this stuff over here, which is negative, which is really not who you are as a person, you know, that now you need to tie it to that new value. What's that highest priority value to have in your life that you're robbing yourself from? Oftentimes, as I'm dealing with entrepreneurs, is they're focused on the money side of things. So they'll go down the money route, you know, but the same thing applies to the PTSD side of things. It's like, if all this anger and all these things are destroying my body, then you're not going to be around for your family. You're not going to be around for yourself to do those things that you want to do in life. So you really just are destroying yourself from the inside. And you're keeping yourself from your highest priorities of value. And it's going back and it's releasing those emotions that are tied to the past and moving to be able to move forward from the future. But so many times people are just wanting to charge into the future without dealing with the past. And you got to deal with the past once and for all and just put it to bed. And it's not going and talking about the stuff over and over again. This is not some therapy session that you're going to have to go to at the VA for the next 5 or 6 years. I did that.
Right.
I went to the VA therapist and that was not helpful. And I'm not saying don't go, but I'm just telling you that I'm just being honest. So, you know, I went in to try to deal with stuff I was dealing with, and I just wasn't getting anywhere.
Right.
You know, so, you know, when I worked with Tom, it was like instant. I was like, oh my gosh, the next day, I was like, all right, well, I can move on with my life now. You know, so to get back to the transition into the T, as far as the process, that's where the transformation happens. And that's where, when you can see yourself doing those things in the future now that you couldn't see in the past, you know, where you can see yourself stepping into that life that you want to have, and you don't have the same emotions that are tied to it.
Right.
Or if you see an individual that's out there, I worked with a Marine, gunny, and, gunny had been part of the, crisis response that was taking the black box out of the plane in Pennsylvania, United Flight 93. And, when he did that, you know, he had survivor's guilt. Like every year he would just black out on 9/11 and, he would have fits of rage where he would get so, you know, pissed off that basically his eyes would glaze over and he'd black out. And it was all tied back to the stuff that happened along the way. So once he was able to deal with the past and release that stuff, he could see himself, you know, being okay in the future. And one of the things that Gunny told me he wanted as a result of that, you know, in the future was he wanted to help more veterans, you know. And I was like, all right, Gunny, I was like, how many veterans do you want to help? You know, I was like, let's quantify this. Look at some of the things you're going to be able to do. He's like, well, I'll be able to get on radio. I'll be able to get on, you know, talk and all this stuff. And this is, it's been about a year and a half now. He went from not coming out of his house on 9/11 to this year past 9/11. Me and him went to the Travis Manion run they have here in Annapolis. Thousands of people there, and he was there with his dog and hanging out. And I was there, introduced him to the colonel, and he introduced me to like the governor and other people he's been talking with since then.
Right.
Because now he's like a spokesperson, speaks all the time about, you know, veterans benefits. He's organized a veteran benefit this weekend. He's in charge of the congressman from the state is reaching out to him.
Wow.
They're like organized events now at this point.
So you're gonna have to come back next Thursday and we'll talk some more if you don't mind. If you can do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay. So the bottom line is, I think a lot of people, and I understand you're not bad mouthing the VA or therapy. You're just saying it didn't work for you. And we all know that there's other ways, much of it peer to peer, help, because nobody gets it like your peers get it. But you've got to deal with that, which I don't want to say you run from, but you try to wall off. At some point, you got to square up with it, and you have to deal with it. Yes or no?
Yes, absolutely. And you're absolutely right by that, the whole squaring up thing. And we're taught as Marines to bury our shit and deal with it and basically not have to – it kind of blocks that all.
Right.
You know? And it doesn't work long term, though.
No. Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, there's guys from World War II that did it. I mean, it's not healthy. Right. And sometimes it manifests itself another way. Guys from Vietnam, they didn't have any of this stuff, and nobody wanted to talk to them. And I remember talking to a therapist and saying, "What do you talk to those guys about?" It was a group of Vietnam veterans that he met with before I got there, and he looked at me and said, "The same thing I talked to you about. They've never dealt with it." I was like, "Wow, that's trying to bury it, right?" The attempt to bury it, the attempt to wall it off. So it's squaring up with it, and then give me 60 seconds on the trying to rewire it, because anybody who's read about that, that's not an easy task.
Mm-hmm. Well, the 60 second answer, the easy one,
right,
is in forgiveness.
No, not the easy one, the 60 second one.
It's going through the process of forgiveness to find out where you actually learned whatever that thing was, and then just honestly forgiving yourself for creating that or forgiving the people that were there that created it.
Wow.
It's in that part that is where the magic happens.
You know, I heard, I don't know where I heard it, but it's in my head, or maybe I made it up, but one of the best pieces of advice I've ever heard is to be gentle with yourself. This is not easy stuff. The story that you tell is not an easy story for you to tell, for even to hear, because we've all, a lot of us have lived similar trajectories in our life. And you hear the pain, and it's not easy. And so one of the things I find myself constantly saying is, hey, man, and it's so un-Marine-like, right? Be gentle with yourself. Be gentle with yourself. This isn't easy. Keep fighting through it. Keep working towards it. But be gentle with yourself. And it makes me laugh when I say it, like, oh, my God, unbelievable. But just so everybody knows, I participated in a call and kind of a seminar that Daryl did the other night. And to be honest with you, I hate selling, and I've hated it my whole life. And, you know, through just talking about it with him over the course of maybe an hour, I I realized where that came from, and I never really associated that before. And it's changed my view about, you know what, the road to helping people, the road to my family security leads through selling. When I sell, I enable all of that goodness to happen. And all I have to do is tell people I want to work with them, tell them I want to help, and ask if they're interested. And it's down that road that all these other things, to include all the cool things that All Marine Radio does on a daily basis, sharing these discussions with people and enabling them to say, hey, well, maybe I can do that too, happen. And I will tell you this. I mean, I was, you know, I was struggling with, you know, how do I sell? So I just want to tell you that what he did with me the other night, it worked for me. It worked. It's in the process of working every day because I have to get up every day and do it. But it makes sense to me in my head. It makes sense to me in my head. And in a way that just talking about it in therapy, you know, okay, yeah, we can talk about it and we can identify these things. But I think the best part of what Daryl, you know, works on with you is you get a roadmap of, okay, now I know what I have to do. And so for those of us who've lived, you know, as Marines, as veterans, the doing part we can do. We have no problem doing. We're a doing organization. And it's getting to the point where you have the plan and you feel comfortable in it and you're ready to do it. So anyway, Daryl, let me, first of all, thank you for coming on and doing this. And,
you're welcome.
No, I appreciate thank you for your patience and allowing me to crop it a little bit. But he has his own time. When he's doing his thing, he's got his own timeline. And so I have apologized for jumping in there. Come back next week and we'll talk about more squaring up and then rewiring, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Tell everybody how they find you and what you do.
The easiest way to find me, guys, is on Facebook and off my website. If you go to daryllhill.com. That's daryllhill.com. On Facebook, I mean Daryl Hill. As well as I set up a fan page I call it the 1775 Brotherhood. If you want to go on there and like the fan page around Marine stuff, I post a lot of cool Marine stuff down there and just memes and fun stuff. And it's fun to be a Marine and get around guys. And I'm sharing a lot of business stuff on there for anybody who wants help on that kind of realm too. So I've got my own interview show where I interview seven-figure plus entrepreneurs, guys that are clients of mine, friends of mine, and just getting their message out there because, I mean, I want to bring that to guys out there that don't even know it's possible. So that's what I'm really, you know, some of the stuff I'm really passionate about.
First of all, I hope that our partnership lasts a long time and that we find different ways to collaborate and spread this gospel because it's another tool that people can look at and say, hey man, I heard about this. Let me check it out because that's what I need. I need a blueprint. I need to square up and square up a football term, by the way. I need to square up and I need to, I want to go there. But I don't think I can get there. And so another tool. And so thanks for doing this. We'll do another installment next week. And anytime that we can be of help to you, whether you're out and about traveling and doing seminars or whatever, however you do it, man, please don't hesitate to give me a call. And, you know, you can come on anytime you want to. And, and then we'll spread the good news because what you do is you make lives better and we need more.
And next Tuesday night, I'm going to do another one of those talks. Like I did this past week with you on Tuesday.
Okay, so tell anybody who's listening, how do they tap into that?
If you just go to the website, daryllhill.com, and contact me from there, I'll have a landing page set up, and you can register in for the next call. Also, I'll send you over a link, and then you can send it out to whoever you'd like to send it to. You have like an email distribution list. I mean, that's always helpful.
All right. Daryl Hill, former major United States Marine Corps infantry guy from the Naval Academy. Daryl, thanks for the visit today. On a personal note, appreciate all the help the other night. I became that guy. I didn't really know I was going to be that guy, but I became that guy You know, whenever you hear people start saying, thank you for sharing, you're like, oh, man, he made me into that guy. And, but it was, no.
I'm getting emails from people, and they're like, oh, my gosh, that Mike's amazing.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Connect with that guy.
He's so jacked up, it's a joke. Anyway. All right, Daryl, thanks for the visit.
All right.
All right, bud. Later. He rod me. Wow. The Gunner joins us next on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Don't touch it.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.